Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on advertising when we come back. The genocidal policy of Global 2000 and this New World Order are the greatest threats to our lives, our liberties, and our property since Noah's flood. And now our national leaders have subscribed to a plan created by the Club of Rome, the United Nations, the Trilateral Commission, and a whole host and plethora of other lesser policy-making think tanks, and their objective is to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. And that's correct. That's 90% over the next 50 years. Now, let's not delude ourselves into believing that you and I are going to stop all of these mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians in this insane scheme to enslave the world and to impose a worldwide tyranny, as they call it, a new world order upon all of us. But, you know, we don't have to participate in our own demise. We do not have to help them. We do not have to finance them, and we don't have to stand by helplessly and do nothing either. That's why I contend that it's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to the God of Israel and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and survive Global 2000 and the New World Order nightmare. Now, if you'd like to learn more about that, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? Now, that's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. That's our General Law CD package. Again, that number, 417-273-4967. Remember, our Subsistence and Survival School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, just go to the website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on the email. Send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about advertising. Advertising in general is a good thing. Advertising gives you and I the information that we need to make purchases, to live our lives, to have a standard of living that we enjoy today, especially here in the Western world. It tells us, for instance, that there is a sale on sweet corn down at Walmart, and that the sweet corn is on sale for 12 ears for a dollar. Now, that's less than 10 cents an ear, and most of us like sweet corn. Now, that's the good side of advertising. It tells us what's available. It tells us where it's available. It tells us the price that it's available at, so that we can go down and make the best possible decision with our money. We can buy sweet corn at Walmart for less than 10 cents an ear, but it's being sold all over town for 15 or 20 cents an ear. And so it helps us allocate our money. It helps us allocate our funds. It tells us where the best buys are at and where the best products are located. It saves us time and effort and energy. Do your shopping in the yellow pages. Let your fingers do the walking through the yellow pages, was an old ad that the phone company used to put on. And of course, they were advertising their product, which was advertising. You know, the people that are selling advertising, they have to sell that advertising to somebody that wants to advertise. And advertising comes in many forms. It can come in the form of a book. It can come in the form of this radio program. It can come in the form of a notice on the bulletin board down at the local laundromat or over at the supermarket. You know, when my wife is checking out, I oftentimes go over to the bulletin board at the supermarket, a town and country supermarket, and I look on there and I see people's business cards. The roofers and the plumbers and carpenters, you know, the handymen and so on, they put their cards up there on the bulletin board. You know, if I needed a plumber, a carpenter, an electrician, I know exactly where to go find one because he's going to have his card on the bulletin board over at the laundromat nor over at the supermarket. So advertising is a good thing. I'm not down on advertising. What I'm down on is the damn lies that go on in advertising. When old Bob the roofer over here puts his business card up on the bulletin board, he's advertising to me. He's saying to me, hey, listen, if you need a plumber, you need a carpenter, you need a roofer, you know, here I am. You know, probably old Bob the roofer over here is probably as good as any and better than most. After I try him once, or if I ask somebody else in the neighborhood, hey, is this old Bob the roofer, is he any good? Oh, yeah, old Bob put a roof on my barn. He's a pretty good roof. It's still not leaking. Been there 10 years. Then that tells me a little something, and it shorts the time or shortens up the time that I need to spend looking for this roofer. If I need some guy right away, that's advertising, and it's a good thing, and it does me a favor. But when somebody lies to me, and then they use that, or they deceive me, and they use that to take my money, and they shortchange me, that's the bad advertising that I'm concerned about. And while we're talking about Walmart and the ears of corn, I would appreciate it if Walmart added in the ad that this sweet corn, the reason that it's so cheap is because it's Monsanto brand 577 genetically engineered sweet corn. That's what I would appreciate. Now, most people don't care about genetic engineering, and they don't care about the foods that they eat. At least that's true here in the United States. It isn't true in Europe, and it isn't true around the world, but it's true here in the United States. More than 80% of people in this country don't give a rat's rectum whether or not they're eating GM corn or they're eating open-pollinated corn or what it is. If it tastes good, we'll eat it. Now, I'm one of that minority, and I want to know whether that's genetically engineered, and Walmart and all the rest of these big conglomerates have gone to Congress, and they got the advertising law that they wanted. The law says they don't have to tell us if this corn is GE corn or not. That's what I'm opposed to. I don't like that. That's a deception. It's a deception in advertising. And these deceptions come in many, many different forms. It can be with a direct, absolute lie, or it can come with a direct, absolute statement of truth. Nobody's lying to you. But they combine the truth with innuendo, or they'll combine the truth with some outright lies so that it will lead us to a false conclusion. Or in the case of the GE corn, we will withhold the truth so that you won't know, you can't get all of the information that you need to make the decision that you really want to make. That's what I'm opposed to. Now, the other day, my wife brought home a box of chocolate eclairs. There are 50 little eclairs, about one bite in size, inside this container. Now, these eclairs are really good. They're really tasty. And I imagine they're just real nutritious, just busting out with vitamins and minerals and all of the things that we all want to get out of our chocolate eclairs. And they're tasty, and I kind of like them once in a while. I'm one of those kind of people, you know, that gets weak with chocolate on top of the eclairs, you know. And so, anyway, once in a while we splurge and we get something we like. And I look on the box of eclairs. My God, they're good-looking eclairs. I mean, they are just scrumptious-looking. And on the picture that's on this box of eclairs are four eclairs. Four. Now, they're about one bite in size, and I knew that if there were 50 eclairs inside this box, you know, about 8 by 8 by 4, if there was 50 in there, they could not be the big ones that we get down at the bakery. I mean, you know, this box would only hold about four of those. But it says it's got 50 in here, and so my common sense said, well, they're going to be small, but there's going to be 50. And then when you look at the picture, I mean, it is perfect. The picture is perfect. And the chocolate goes from corner to corner and end to end, and it's really thick. See? And so my eye catches those four. Now, there's only four eclairs on the picture. I count them. 1, 2, 3, 4. Four. And those then tell me the communication, the advertisement. This picture is an advertisement, and it communicates information to me. And the information that it tells me is that what's inside this box is just exactly like what I'm looking at in the picture. That picture is what's inside this box. Only there's 50 of them, not just four, but 50. And so I open the box and I look inside. And these little eclairs are upside down, right side up, standing on end, and they're all over the place in here. And they're about half the size of the actual picture on the cover. And the chocolate is a little dab right in the middle, and it does not go from corner to corner and then end to end. That picture is a lying deception. It does not accurately represent what is in that box. Now, I reached in and I pulled one out and I plunked it in my mouth, and it's very tasty and it's very good, and I'm very satisfied with the product. Very satisfied with the product. We've bought that brand before. We've bought those boxes before, and we like them. The reason I take the time to report this is that if you will pay attention to the picture and then compare the picture to the actual product, you will find that picture is at least 10 times better than the actual product inside. Now, had they communicated the truth to me, they would have taken a box with the lid off and taken a picture of the eclairs that are actually in the box, not neatly on the bottom with the chocolate on the top, but upside down and standing on end and over on their sides, and some of them are standing up flat the way they picture them. But they would have taken an actual picture, and they would have shown me how much chocolate is on the eclair, and that is a little dab in the middle, where the machine, you know, went by and put this little dab of chocolate. Nobody took a knife and spread the chocolate evenly all over the top of this eclair like they did for the picture when they shot the picture. See? So they want to present the product in the best light possible, and that makes all the sense in the world, and I don't blame them for wanting to put the product in the best possible light. But you know, you could have taken the actual product and you could have shot a picture of it with a little dab of chocolate in the middle, because that's actually what you're selling, partner. You're not selling an eclair with chocolate corner to corner, end to end. You're selling an eclair with a little dab of chocolate in the center, and it's as bald as a billiard cue on the rest of the top of this eclair. Got that? And you could have done that. And I probably would have bought it anyway, but, you know, maybe I wouldn't buy it. Maybe some people wouldn't buy it because it doesn't quite look good. In which case, then don't you need to change your product and make your product look better? You know, actually sell us what it is that you're selling. I mean, that's a wild new concept. Actually deliver to us what it is that you're selling. So there's the story on the chocolate eclairs. And I told you last time about the bottle of wine over here. You know, I look at the bottle of wine, and you could sell me a quart and charge me more money. I mentioned this the other day. You know, people that buy champagne, you know, aren't winos down on Skid Row buying Ripple. They're people with money in their pockets, and they're buying champagne. And so I would have appreciated it more if these people, you know, packaged this thing. It's called, you know, truth in advertising. You know, if this thing has got a quart and you've got a quart bottle and you're trying to show me that this is a quart, then don't put the concave in the bottom of it over here and short me by 2.5 ounces. Give me a full quart. Put a big line, you know, across the top of the label that says one full quart in great big bold letters, you know, and sell me a one full quart. Don't sell me 750 milliliters, would you? Now, this doesn't mean that the wine company over here is going to change their bottles, and it doesn't mean that the Eclair company is going to change anything, and I'm still going to buy their champagne. But I'm alerted to the fact, boys and girls, that this wine company is lying to me and cheating me. And I'm alerted to the fact that the Eclair company has exaggerated the quality of their product. And that gives me a little bit of a leg up. It gives me an opportunity to say, hell no, I won't buy your eclairs. I'll go down to the bakery. Or, hell no, I won't buy your wine. I'll buy somebody else's. And I may just do that. And I may switch over to buying French wine or something else one of these days if I could see the French weren't cheating me. I kind of doubt that. I would guesstimate that the French probably do the same thing. But that's why I'm advertising here on this program. And I say, well, I'm looking for truth in advertising. Let's take a look at another little story over here about truth in advertising. Because sometimes the ads that you put on not only are lies, they're deliberate lies with the intention of deceiving you for some ulterior motive. And they can get kind of wicked and evil. One of my students the other day came in with a couple of CDs, and it was on the 9/11 story. And I think I've reported this in the past, that the 9/11 story that the government's been putting out for the past several years to justify our war in Iraq and in Afghanistan, 34% of people, 34%, that's one-third, that's one person out of every third in America, believes that the government's story concerning 9/11 is a lie and that it's probably an inside job and that the government did it. It's a false flag operation, like the Gulf of Tonkin or the sinking of the Lusitania or the Pearl Harbor attack, that it's a false flag, phony, made-in-Washington deal. Now, that's really a surprising statistic. And I saw that in the International Forecaster, and I said, well, geez, I wonder where Chapman got that number. The other day, I was reading another publication, and I saw another number pop up, 84%. Now, this is, add another 50% to this, believe that, now this is 84%, and the way they worded it, only 16% of Americans believe that the 9/11 attacks are true, accurate, and correct as the government has told us the story. And I fit into that group right there. Now, I believe that the Trade Tower attacks were true, accurate, and correct as the government told us the story. I've always believed that until recently. I always believed that story. And it's part of advertising. I mean, it's the government selling us a war. You know, if George Bush had come out and said, listen, the economy is sagging and we need a stimulus to stimulate the economy, and I would like to put forth my idea, I think a war with Iraq would be a hell of a neat stimulus for the economy. You see, that's just not the way you sell war. People will not buy war as a stimulus for the economy. Now, people will buy Air Force bases. You know, if you've got an Air Force base in your neck of the woods, and maybe this Air Force base was designed in 1917 for Curtis Wright biplanes, and maybe it ought to be closed, there isn't anybody that's in that congressional district that's in favor of closing the Curtis Wright biplane Air Force base. Now, we want that Air Force base because it stimulates the economy in our local area, and it makes jobs. And that's, after all, what we want to do. But the real world out here, the general public will not buy World War II or World War I just because we need it as an economic stimulus. We have to have some external stimulus. And so Pearl Harbor was a good example of that. You know, the Japs come in and they bomb Pearl Harbor and they sink two or three ships and they kill 3,000 of our guys, and that just ticks us off, and so we go to war. Now that's the way that's done. It's the way World War II came about. And the sinking of the Lusitania failed in 1915, but it finally succeeded. I mean, we got a belly full after a while. We said, well, time for us to go to war over and clean this mess up. And well, that's what happened here with the war in Iraq. And the numbers that I see here are really pretty telling. And that is, today, 5 years after the war gets started, only 16% now believe the government story is true, accurate, and correct, and that an airplane flew into the Pentagon and Osama bin Laden sent these two airplanes into the trade towers. 34%, though, believe there's something wrong with the story. Now, I'm down here with that 34%, and I'll tell you what bothered me See, I'm an old-timey pilot. I'm an old-timey guy, and I fly airplanes. And I know from my own experience of seeing airplane wrecks, you know, I've been out to an airplane wreck or two, and I've been to an airplane junkyard a couple of times, and I've watched the photographs of, you know, I've been around, you know, for forever, and I'm an old man now. And I know for a fact that if you take an F-16 up to about 10,000 feet, nose it over, pour on the coal, then run that thing into the ground at Mach 2. I mean, just nose it right into the ground. It'll make a hell of a fireball. It'll make a crater. It'll kill the pilot, and it'll destroy the airplane, and there'll be a big explosion, and it'll just, the airplane will disintegrate into little pieces, and it'll just be a hell of a show. But that's the point. When you go out there to investigate the wreck, you will find pieces of airplane out there. You'll find a wheel over here. You'll find this or that. It may be buried, you know, in the ground, but it's there. All of it's there. And that was my problem with that Pentagon story. There was no airplane there. And a fellow by the name of Dave Von Kleist put out a CD, I don't know, a year or two ago, or 3 years, I don't know how old it is, but it's been out for a while. And Dave Von Kleist on the Power Hour. Many of you people have probably heard of the Power Hour and Dave and Joyce. And so anyway, I saw his 9/11 CD, or DVD, I guess it is. And he very adequately goes through the details, and he lays it all out and confirmed my suspicion. See? Now, we had the video of the two airplanes hitting the Trade Tower. I mean, everybody could see the airplanes. But remember, when we're talking about advertising, advertising is also a methodology whereby we use your eyes, like with the chocolate eclairs, to deceive you. That's part and parcel with the program. We're going to use your eyes. You're going to believe me or your lying eyes? Boys and girls, your eyes are liars. Eyewitness testimony is the least reliable testimony in court. It's the one thing that everybody believes, though. I mean, everybody believes an eyewitness, but I already demonstrated eyewitness testimony is just BS. You know, not all the time, but, you know, much of it is. So I was in that group over here of the 34%. I knew there was something wrong here. I believed that Trade Tower story. I mean, my lying eyes saw the two airplanes hit it, and then a little later on, I saw the thing collapse. And then I saw Nova. And Nova put on a special on twice. Nova put out two neat programs on why those Trade Towers collapsed. And, you know, I'm just a layman. I'm not an engineer. I don't know very much about a lot of things in life. And so I listened to the story on Nova, and that's a pretty scientific program. And, you know, they had high-powered engineers come on there and testify, and they had all these stress tests, and then they did this and did that and another thing. And so I said, well, that sounds pretty logical. Yep, sounds pretty logical. Now, we all saw those buildings collapse, didn't we? We saw the pictures of them. And we've also seen pictures of buildings that have been blown up. You know how they fall down and they don't fall out on the street, and it's really quite a sight. They call it demolition, you know. And I remembered that the day they came down, I said, Jesus, they're falling just like they do when they demolish them. But you know, the government and Nova didn't tell me they were demolishing them. They said no, they fell down because of the heat generated by those airplanes. And I thought, well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, you know, they got 13,000 gallons of fuel, you know, and you pour that on the fire, and you get that fire to going. And yeah, that makes sense to me. So I bought into that program. I guess most of us did. Now, the Pentagon was another story. I said, there's something wrong there. I don't know what the hell's wrong. You got all these people by the hundreds that are picking these pieces up over here. It was done right in plain sight. And I thought, well, surely there's got to be an airplane wheel. You know, those airplane engines are made out of steel, you know. In fact, on that second airplane that hit the Trade Tower, it went right through the building and the engine came out on the street. You know, they got the engine out of that one. So I just want to point out, you know, that there should be some airplane pieces, you know, there at the Pentagon. And I have yet to see anybody produce a single piece off that airplane. So, you know, my common sense says, well, there's something wrong. But, you know, I watch Katie Couric, you know, and say, you know, Katie, you know, if there was anything going on, surely she'd tell me, wouldn't she? I mean, if you can't believe CBS, who can you believe? Well, anyway, I got to tell you that I saw a CD last night. One of my students came in. He brought me in a pair of CDs with Alex Jones, and he's moderating this symposium, 9/11 something or other. I forgot what it was now, but it was out in Los Angeles, and they had this professor from Brigham Young on the tape. I've read his name a couple of times in the forecaster, but I didn't know who the guy was. And, you know, I just sit here on the sidelines waiting for things to develop, and this professor comes in there, and he says, hey, listen, we got a bucket of scrap that came off of the site over here, and there's molten metal. And I'm sitting here watching this, and I said to myself, well, so what? I imagine there would be some molten metal if you had a hot fire. And so he pointed out, he said, but this molten metal is a little different than most molten metal. It's got sulfur in it. And I'm a layman, you know, so I'm sitting here saying, well, so what? And he said, well, when you got sulfur and molten metal, that means that you had to have something that brought the sulfur in there because the sulfur ain't in the metal when you start. And then my ears perked up, and I said, oh, well, how come? And he said, well, because there's a product, and I forgot what the name of it was now. It wasn't cordite or something, but some explosive. And when this explosive goes off, whatever the name of this stuff is, it leaves a sulfur residue, and it cuts these steel beams. They're called shaped charges. And so they produced some pictures of metal out of the Trade Towers over there that had all of the indicators on there that shaped charges had bent them and cut them. And there was this molten metal that had this residue on it. And I said, oh, my God. And then they put this whole story on, and it's about a four-hour program, two discs, about 4 hours. And now I can see why about 84% of us don't believe the government story. And this is advertising at its best. See, these people are advertising. And they're saying, hey, there's another side of the story over there. Let me tell you the rest of the story. And so they're advertising the alternative to the 9/11 story that the government is advertising. And their advertising is raising a lot of questions. And they're telling us a lot of facts and giving us a lot of truth. They may not have all the truth, but they've got a lot of it. And the conclusion that you have to come to when you get to the end of watching these two CDs is that the government's lying to us. Which is what I've been demonstrating here, that advertising is a methodology of controlled lies. Now, the government isn't lying to us 100% of the time. They just lie to us about certain key facts, and they tell us the truth about certain key facts. Then they lie to us about certain key facts, and then they tell us the truth about some more facts, and then they lie to us some more, and then we put all of this together, and we come to a conclusion. And for several years, I listened to all of their stories and their lies, and I believed their story, you know, just like I think everybody else did. And then you know, some of us had some doubts. Now, when I saw those buildings come down, I said, oh, my God, that's just like I saw Cabrini Green go down when I was watching the PBS channel. You know, they had a story on there about demolition, and I watched Cabrini Green, and I watched the buildings explode and implode and fall down. And when I saw the trade towers, now, you know, all of us saw those trade towers come down, didn't we? We all saw that. And didn't your mind say, God, that's just like those demolitions? But see, when the government said, well, this isn't a demolition, I mean, this is a terrorist attack, I believed it because it made all the sense in the world. Because, you see, I watched Nova, and Nova said, well, see, this building pancaked down, you know, as it was falling. And then there was another nagging thing I had. How in the hell would you get into the trade towers? And, you know, it takes months. I mean, you've got to plant these demolition charges all over. I remember watching the PBS demolition thing. It takes months of careful planning, and you've got to plant all these charges all over the building. I mean, you don't just put a bomb down in the basement and blow it up. I mean, you got to have hundreds, maybe even in buildings like that, thousands of little individual charges all over, and they go off with a computer, and they have to be timed, and the timing, you know, is right to the split second. You know, bang, 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 bang. You've probably seen it. And I said, how in the hell could they ever get in there? Well, in this CD, they said, well, George Bush's brother ran the security company from 1999 to 2001. The security company? The Bush brother ran the security company. I said, well, isn't that just real curious? But there's another piece in the story I got to share with you here. And that was a fellow by the name of Silverstein. Nice Jewish name over here, you know. And this guy Silverstein, nice fellow that he is caught on TV, and there's a 42-story building. 42-story building on the complex site. On the trade tower, you know, there's a 16-acre site there, and they had about six or seven buildings. And one of the buildings is 42 stories. You know, that's not a small building. 42-story building, you know, maybe in New York it's a little building, but let me tell you, there isn't anything over here in Missouri that's 42-story, I don't think. And that's a pretty good-sized building. Well, anyway, remember 9/11? At the end of 9/11, at the end of the day, this guy Silverstein says, well, go ahead and pull it. And then they show pictures of this 42-story building just neatly imploding and falling to the ground in 6 seconds, which means that that 42-story building had to have been wired for demolition prior to 9/11. In order for you to push the switch and that building to fall down in 6 seconds at the end of the day on 9/11, you had to have that thing wired, and it takes months to wire one of those buildings. That building was wired for demolition months in advance. I didn't know that. I saw the pictures, you know, all these little news blurbs over there, but until I saw this advertisement put out by, I don't know if it's Alex Jones that put it out, or Dave Van Kleist, or Von Kleist, or maybe a combination. Somebody put these out. And there's a bunch of them out there now. I mean, there's several people that have put these out. And these people are advertising, and what they're advertising, they're saying, hey, wake up, troops. Did you know that you've been lied to? Which isn't unusual. I mean, government's been lying to us, you know, from day one. It's normal government procedure. But I just never in my wildest imagination could have believed that this guy, Silverstein over here, who's just a businessman, you know, we take a look at him, he's just a nice-looking guy, and he's, you know, just a nice businessman, would have participated in the deliberate destruction of his own property because he owned that. And then I found out, and this is the clincher here, this guy Silverstein bought the trade towers and that complex for $15 million. Now, listen, kids, that's dirt cheap, $15 million. And then he went to work right away. He only had them for 6 months before they went down, you know, before they were destroyed. But he went to the insurance companies, and he got the insurance companies to insure them against terrorist attack, insure the buildings against terrorist attacks for, I think it was $7 billion. And then in this CD, they show us that the trade towers have been losing money for about 15 years. Yeah, it's a real estate project that's been losing money. And you know, that was the problem with the Titanic. It was losing money. Did you know that? Yeah, see, they had four of those Titanic-type ships. Two of them were already launched. The Titanic was third. They had one on the drawing boards. And they found out by the time they launched the Titanic that they had overbuilt and the ship was running at about half a load and it was losing money. And isn't it surprising that it sank on its maiden voyage? So I'd share that with you. But and here's this this complex here that this guy Silverstein buys. And he buys it and he makes $7 billion on the insurance money on a $15 million investment. I'm a businessman, and I said, wow, that's a pretty good investment. He did that in 2 years. Well, I actually did it in 6 months, but it took him 2 years to collect the double indemnity. So I thought I'd share that with you and then demonstrate again that what we see with our eyes can also be used as a deception in advertising. So don't believe what you see, because what you see is oftentimes a lying deception. Hey, let me give you a reminder here. That is, you are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, The Law School teaches 8 schools, such as family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to recommend or endorse us. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on The Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily totally endorsed by The Law Hour and editorial review. We may endorse some of it, but not all of it. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about The Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. I guess while I'm at it, I should recommend these CDs. Why don't you go to the Power Hour website? I think it's thepowerhour.com, as I recall. And the other one here is Alex Jones' website called InfoWars, InfoWars, InfoWars.com. And you can probably get a copy of those CDs. I think they're DVDs. And they're really very professionally done. I was very impressed with Dave Von Kleist's presentation, which was totally different than the other presentation that I got. And I'm assuming it comes from InfoWars.com and put out by Alex Jones. Now, Jones puts out a number of programs, documentaries. And he and Joyce and Dave are political in nature, and we're not too political here on The Law, or we concentrate more on law and the legal end of politics, I guess we would say, the judicial side of government, as opposed to the political side. But this is really an interesting political dissertation that's on this 9/11 hoax. I forget exactly what they call it, the 9/11 hoax or 9/11 myth, I think is what that's titled, the 9/11 myth. And there's two of them that I've seen that I really was impressed with, very professionally done. And I think that when you view these, I think that your opinion of George Bush will go a little lower than what it's already gone. I mean, his approval rating is around 35% to 40%, but I think his approval rating with people that see this video, or in this case it's a CD or a DVD, whatever you call it, is going to go a little lower than that, probably down somewhere around minus 10, minus 20, something like that. Again, that's InfoWars.com or ThePowerHour.com. All right, let me tell you a little bit more here about this thing of advertising. I'll take another little tack here called insurance. Insurance is a lying deception coming right out of the chute. In fact, insurance is strictly prohibited in the scripture, just like usury, you know, and interest is strictly prohibited. And people will oftentimes, when I mention that to them, they'll say, well, you know, how would we do business without interest? You know? Well, you know, there was business before there was interest in usury in banks. I would presume we'd probably go back to doing business like we did it before. I do business every day, and I do business without interest and usury. I don't have any problems. I'm not complaining. And there's about 130 million Arabs over there in the Middle East, and they do business. They've got banks, and they do business without usury and interest. So just because you don't know how to do business without usury and interest doesn't mean it can't be done. The same thing is true with insurance. You know, just because you have insurance and you can't imagine a world without insurance doesn't mean that insurance was here from the Garden of Eden forward. You know, insurance developed after the Garden of Eden. Insurance has developed in its present form in the last 100 years. Now, insurance has been around for a long time. I don't deny that. But the average ordinary Joe Sixpack American didn't have insurance in 1900. So insurance has developed in the 20th century, and now it applies to every Joe Sixpack. In fact, as a matter of law, you have to have insurance on your car. I mean, they just enacted legislation that said you're going to have insurance whether you like it or not. So we're all familiar with that. But insurance is a lying deception, and it's scripturally unsound. In fact, insurance by definition, as a legal definition, is what we call limited liability. Insurance is designed to limit your liability. You're responsible for this accident, but we're going to limit the dollars that you have to pay because you've got insurance. And so we buy limited liability, which is the opposite of strict liability, which is what God requires in Exodus 21. He says, I want you people to all be responsible for your actions. 100 cents on the dollar, responsible. Well, that's not very, very alluring. Who in hell wants to be responsible for his actions, especially when it's negative? So we buy insurance. Now, the insurance companies lie to us and steal from us, as all you people down there on the Gulf Coast can now testify to after the fact. You all bought hurricane insurance. And then you found out after the hurricane came through that the insurance company wouldn't pay you because they don't pay for flood damage, and the damage that you suffered was caused by water, and we don't pay for water damage. But did they explain that to you when you bought the insurance policy? And there's that lying deception again. And the insurance companies sell millions of people along the Gulf Coast, you know, starting down here at Key West, Florida, and running all the way up the coast of Florida, and around through Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Texas down to Brownsville. So all the way around the circle, from Key West to Brownsville, all the way around the Gulf, millions of people along that Gulf Coast buy hurricane insurance. And when the insurance agent comes out and he sells you the policy, he tells you about how you're in safe hands with Allstate, and this is the greatest program that God's ever designed. And when this hurricane comes, in fact, they appeal to your fear, and they say, my God, what would you do if you had a hurricane and the hurricane destroyed your house? And then, of course, you visualize, oh, yeah, that's right. If I had a hurricane here and it destroyed my house, oh, my God, I'd be poverty-stricken. And so, yeah, it's expensive, and I don't want to buy it, and I would rather spend the money on a Carnival cruise, but I guess I better forego the Carnival cruise and spend the money on insurance and buy this hurricane insurance because I live in this hurricane zone. See? And so you bought this hurricane insurance. Now, that agent, when he was out there selling you this insurance policy, he did not tell you that we do not pay for water damage. He didn't tell you that. Any more than Walmart is going to tell you, yeah, we're selling corn, but it's GMO. They're not going to tell you that. That's an omission. See? And so we're going to lie to you and deceive you by omission, because if he said, oh, and by the way, 90% of the damage that you incur in a hurricane is going to be water damage, and we do not pay for any water damage. We only pay for wind damage. Would you have bought that policy? And the answer is, well, not unless you were brain dead or that you were mentally deficient. You know, if you had an IQ down around 75, 80, you might have bought it anyway. But most people, you know, who's got normal IQs, you know, of 85 or 90, you know, we would have said, hell no, we won't go. And so the insurance companies, you know, they know that. They want your premiums, but they don't want to pay in the event that you have a damage. So you need to understand that. Insurance companies are businesses, and businesses are in business to make profit. I know that you've been raised here in a communist society where you believe that employers like Ford exist to employ people. No, sir. No, sir. There isn't a single business that's ever been designed or created from the Garden of Eden until today, nor into the future, that was ever designed to employ people. And if we could run that business with no employees, we would do that. And the only reason that we have any employees is because we can't operate our business without them. So that's the only reason you've got a job, Joe. So understand that. And this same business over here, you know, in its business model, if we didn't have to buy any raw materials, we wouldn't buy any raw materials. We wouldn't buy anything. We would buy nothing and sell it for a big price. And the only reason that we buy these raw materials is because we have to have them in order to produce a product so that you can see something that you're going to buy. So the business model of an insurance company is to sell you this insurance coverage or this policy and then never deliver on a claim. That's our intention. Now, we know that we got to deliver on some claims. And so when you've got a small claim, we pay like a slot machine in a casino. The bells and whistles go off and the red lights flashing, and we make a big scene and we pay you $200 or $300. Now, you just wait until you hit that million-dollar jackpot and see what you're going to get. And have you ever seen that million-dollar jackpot? Neither have I. And the same thing is true with insurance. Now, I'll tell you, as an old-timey insurance adjuster, what the numbers are. If you have an insurance claim of $5,000 or less, then your chances of getting paid are way up past 90%, about 95%. If you have a claim of $100,000 or more, the number of claims that we pay is 9%. Okay, 9%. The other 89% of you are going to go to court. Got that? You're going to sue us. And then we're not going to pay you the whole amount. We're going to pay you something less than $100,000 on average. That's why we do that. We're in business to make money. We're not in business to indemnify you if you have a claim. Now, of course, if we told you that going in, you wouldn't buy insurance. And so we have to be Johnny on the spot and say you're in safe hands with us guys. That's not true. And all of you people down there on the Gulf Coast know that now. But the rest of the people out there don't know that. And so that's why I'm telling you. I'm telling you, insurance violates the law of God, violates the Ten Commandments, violates Exodus 21, verses 28 through 36. It's a crime. It's a criminal activity, and you ought not to do that. Now, you're going to do it anyway, but when you do it, you need to understand that when you have a claim of $100,000 or more, only 9% of you are going to collect, and the other 89% are going to sue, and then you're going to collect something less than you're owed. And that's the way the game is played. It's the way it's always been played. And that's the way it's always going to be played. Now, if you want to buy insurance, get after it. Don't let me get in your way. And I'm opposed to that. And I live in Tornado Alley, and I don't have an insurance policy. I mean, hell, if a tornado comes through here and knocks my house down, I'm going to build a new house. And I'm going to build a new house with the premiums that I would have been paying for the tornado insurance. Now, here's a kicker. See, here in Tornado Alley, a lot of people have tornado insurance. But you need to understand, all you tornado-insured people, that it does not cover wind damage. And what is a tornado? It's a wind. A tornado is a great big wind. That's what we're dealing with. And so this wind comes by, and it's a big, powerful wind, and knocks your house down. And so the insurance companies wouldn't pay us. So now we have what we call tornado watches and watchers, and we have Doppler radar, and they identify this tornado. So here's the way this works. Let's suppose that Color 10 TV, that's KOLR TV in Springfield, with their Doppler radar, they find a tornado, and they document this tornado. And this tornado comes through, let's say, Fordland, Missouri, and it just tears the hell out of the place, and the people there have tornado insurance, and the insurance company will come in and pay you like a slot machine. And that's because they owe the money. And there's a tornado. It's been sighted. It's been documented. And it's on the ground. And so, okay, now watch this. Let's suppose that we have a severe thunderstorm warning with the potential of tornadoes. And on the bottom of the TV screen, you know, it interrupts your NOVA program. You know, we're watching NOVA. We're watching TV. And we break in to interrupt this program to warn you that there's a severe tornado or there's a severe thunderstorm warning, and watch. And they go through, and you got this scroll across the bottom in case you're deaf. See, they got to tell you. So they got this scrolling across the bottom so that all you deaf people can read it. Got that? All right. Now everybody's been warned about this potential tornado. Now, a severe thunderstorm comes through and knocks your barn down, knocks your house down, just tears the hell out of everything. You got tornado insurance. You're going to get paid? Not a dime. Not a dime. And the policy specifically exempts wind damage. The only wind damage we're going to pay you for is a tornado. And if we don't see one, hear one, know of one, and can document one, you ain't getting paid. Well, I'm just asking you a question here. What the hell do you need tornado insurance for? Isn't it because there's this strong wind called a tornado going to knock your house down? Okay. If that's true, then what difference does it make to you whether the wind it comes from a tornado, or the wind comes from a severe thunderstorm, or the wind comes from a cold front blowing through? Isn't your house just as destroyed in any one of those three events? But boys and girls, unless you have a tornado, you can't win the prize. Can you follow that? Now, tornadoes are pretty rare. Now, most of the damage that's caused is caused by severe thunderstorms. 10 times more damage from severe thunderstorms than there ever has been with tornadoes. Thunderstorms are as common as pig tracks in the Midwest. Boys and girls, where we live, I mean, thunderstorms are, you know, not an everyday occurrence, but they're a once-a-week occurrence. And your chances of having some damage from a severe thunderstorm is, you know, fair to middling good. I live around a farm, and I can point to severe thunderstorms that have come through here and uprooted trees and raised hell and done damage and never had a tornado. So I've taken all of my tornado premiums over the last 21 years, and I stuck it into a little pile. And I've got my health insurance premiums and my tornado premiums and my safe and good hands premiums, and I put it over here in a little pile. And one of these days, maybe something like that will happen. And when it does, I'll go into my little pile, and I'll go out and I'll fix it. I'll be money ahead of you people down there in Gulfport, Mississippi. You paid your insurance premiums, and you had your house destroyed, and now they won't pay you. So tuck that one away in your heart, kids. And I'm opposed to that. I mean, you know, we could, if we wanted to, you know, we could come up with a program or a plan over here and do a hell of a lot better job of practicing limited liability if we wanted to. But, I mean, I'm just reporting to you that that's the way the game is played, and that's the way it is today. And if you want to buy insurance, you know, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But I think you'd be money ahead if you spent it on a trip on the Love Boat. Probably do wonders for your marriage and make you happier. Now, there's a lot of other methodologies for advertising. For instance, you can go into a supermarket, or in any store for that matter, but in our local supermarket, they have piped-in background music. And you ever notice that? You walk into the store, oh, wow, got elevator music in here. Well, this is kind of a neat place. I kind of like that. And so as you're shopping, you're going around, you can listen to music. Now, did you think that store is putting that music in there for your benefit, or did you think they put that music in there for their benefit? Now, sometimes you go into a store and there's no background music. And then sometimes you go into a store and there is background music. Well, which store do you think has the higher overhead expense? The store with the background music or the store without it? Well, let me tell you, as an old-timey merchant, it costs money. You have to go to Muzak, M-U-S-A-C-S-A-Z, I believe it is, Muzak, Z-A-C, Z-A-C, M-U-Z-A-C, Muzak. And you subscribe, see, and you pay them a fee, and they pipe this music in for you. And the reason we do that is because we can control you in our store with the music that we play. Did you know that? Yes, sir. We can control you in our store. We can control what you buy in our store with that music. It's a form of advertising. It's a psychological war that we're waging against you, the consumer. And you don't even know. You don't even have a clue. But when I walk into a store and I hear music, I say, uh-oh, grab your ass because they're after your wallet. That's the first thought that goes through my mind when I walk into a store with music. Grab your hiney, hang on to your wallet. They're here to control you. And next time we'll take it up right there on Muzak, M-U-Z-A-C. And I'll show you how you've been manipulated with this music. I like music in the store. I prefer going to stores that have music in the background. But we'll talk about that next time. And we'll talk about product placement and the closing question and add-on interest and 35% consumer interest and 118% title loans on your car title when you go in to borrow money. And by the way, that 118% title loan was passed by a Democratic legislature with a Democratic governor. So if you people out there think the Democrats are over here trying to protect the blue-collar workers, have I got news for you. Next time on the Law Hour, an editorial review. So let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide around the world over the Internet daily. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Okay, our time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.